What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. Welcome to Out There. It's Wednesday, a little after 4 o'clock. My guest today is Andrew Forstoffel. Thanks for coming over. We're actually recording this interview at my house in Florence
in early March 2018.
Andrew, I asked you how you wanted to be introduced, because I know you wrote this book, Walking to Listen. But should I introduce you as the author of Walking to Listen?
Sure. Yeah. I'm proud of that. Yeah. I like that.
Any other ways you'd like to be introduced?
I'm a speaker also, storyteller, a listener. I really identify in that way. And a teacher, a learning how to be a teacher, I think. So those are some ways. Writer, like, poet.
A teacher in a formal way or
In a formal way, yeah. I've had the opportunity to be in classrooms with some students, high school students, college students, and some adults, and just learning how to teach something like listening, you know, or invite learning around that.
Yeah, cool. And you live in the Valley.
Live in Williamsburg.
All right, cool. Yeah. So the book that I just mentioned that we were talking about, that book came out in 2017, like March of 2017, I think.
Yep.
I saw online.
Yeah.
And so that book, what's that book about?
So the book is about a year that I spent walking across America with a sign on my backpack that said Walking to Listen, which is the title of the book. And it was after I graduated from college and, just had this... feeling like I think many, if not all, young people do after crossing through a big threshold like graduation of who am I now and what am I to do with myself. And I think some of the questions that came up around coming of age for me were there, I think, because the culture I experienced in college and also outside of college was filled with ambiguities about what coming of age actually is. And so it was my personal confrontation with that sort of absence of personal exploration and community supported initiation. And, this walk was my best attempt at diving into some of those questions.
What year was it?
This was 2011.
What kind of support, like, do you have family support or friends, or what did people think about your idea of the walk? How did that come about?
So I had heard of people doing long distance walks before, and when the time came to find some way to encounter myself in these questions, the thought of channeling the energy behind those questions by walking just sort of felt right. And also it was affordable, you know, walking's free, didn't have a whole lot of money, had a lot of tuition debt, and I'm blessed to have very supportive parents. So they asked my mom in particular very discerning questions, but never with the intention to manipulate me out of doing it. You know what I mean? So I did not have to defy my family, and I think my friends weren't totally surprised, you know. But when I left, I wasn't sure what it would be. I didn't know that it would be a walk across America necessarily. I was pretty intentional about keeping it open-ended. You know, I didn't want it to be about reaching a specific particular point. And if I didn't get to that point, then it was a failure.
Yeah, you're not walking to get there. You're walking to listen.
Yeah, walking to listen. Exactly. Listen for maybe the end. Maybe today's the last day. Or I ran out of money, and so I'm done now. You know? But it did end up becoming... I started outside Philly, where my mom used to live. Went down to New Orleans, and then finished outside San Francisco. took about a year. Was walking on the highways the whole way.
Like highways? Like
highways, like state highways, okay. county roads. I did walk on some interstates, okay. Even though that's illegal.
Uh-huh. As highways as compared to like paths or trails?
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to the Appalachian Trail, uh-huh, or any of the long distance, yeah, trails in the country. Because I wanted to meet as diverse a cross-section of Americans, yeah, as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I figured the road would be the best place for that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So did you have the sign, Walking to Listen, when you first left? Or did...
I did. Okay. Yeah, when I was... So I had these sort of... just like going back to the beginning, it was like these unformed longings and urgings about, I needed to go do this, I need to do something, what's it going to be? And then it became, uh-huh, this walk. Uh-huh. And then I was like, all right, if I had to summarize in 3 or 4 words what I'm doing, and if I were to put that on a sign, what would it be? Uh-huh. And the most honest thing I could think of was, I'm walking to listen. And I hoped that that would be a sort of invitation for people to, yeah, stop and connect and,
yeah,
enter that world together. Uh-huh. You know.
And that sign felt right for you the entire way across the
country. It did, and yeah, it still does, to be honest.
Yeah.
I still feel like I'm walking to listen,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Not quite in the same way, obviously, but it's that listening-based, listening-centric approach, uh-huh, to reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of reactions did you get from people? Do you have any, like, favorite... reaction things?
Oh, yeah. I was surprised. I remember before I left, there I didn't have much time to prepare in between the time I decided to do it and the time I ended up leaving, maybe 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And in that time, I remember practicing with my mom about... Sort of like we role played, like, okay, how are people going to react to you out there? Uh-huh. You know, and like, uh-huh, she would always play this like mean, suspicious, uh-huh, person, like, uh-huh, walking to listen, I don't believe you. Like, uh-huh, what are you really doing? You know? Uh-huh. So I was preparing to encounter suspicion and, uh-huh, and meanness and cruelty, uh-huh, and, uh-huh, and then in my own self, loneliness and,
yeah,
fear and I guess what surprised me most was the way that I think when people felt the sincerity behind my intention to listen to them, uh-huh, to them personally, uh-huh, you know, uh-huh, like, what do you, oh, you're not walking to listen to, oh, it's to me, you, uh-huh, know, like when they felt that, and it was authentic.
Uh-huh.
I think it, I know that it invited them to trust me.
Yeah.
You know, me trusting them, trusting that there was something worthy within them that deserved listening to,
yeah,
deserved my time and attention, trusting myself to them in that moment, I think inclined many of them, not all people, but many of them to open up and connect.
Yeah.
And of course, some people were, you know, would knock on some doors, can I camp out back? No. You know, there's some of that.
You said, I heard you.
Yeah, okay. I'll listen to that too. That's a part of it. Yeah. But really surprised at how, in some ways, how easy it was, mm-hmm, to connect.
Yeah.
Once I got over my own, all of my own, I mean, and there was so many parts of me that, even though I was longing to connect in this way, so many parts of me that were scared to, or avoiding it somehow, you know, and just leaning into those parts of me and then sort of getting through those parts of me, the connection actually became easy.
Uh-huh. What was that about, do you think? Like being afraid to, like longing for something, that connection, but being afraid. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like when I think about, like, why am I here? Why am I on this earth, in this body, living this life? What makes the struggle of being alive worth it?
Mm-hmm.
The suffering, you know, of being alive worth, mm-hmm, it? The connection between two human beings that can happen in trust,
mm-hmm,
and a willingness to share and show and respect,
mm-hmm,
and give dignity. That's the answer for me mm-hmm. of why am I here? Yeah. That.
Yeah.
You know, and but that kind of connection can only really happen in that vulnerable place. Mm-hmm. It's like when I'm choosing to show you who I really am, which is going to include my tendernesses and frailties and mm-hmm. fallibilities and uncertainties. And that's mm-hmm. I think that's scary because I was trained not to show those things mm-hmm. or taught that to be a man or to be an adult or to that somehow wasn't okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where the aversion for me can come up of like, even though this thing that I long for most mm-hmm. and is the answer to the question of why am I here can also come with some fear. Because it's sort of like, yeah, I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how you, whoever the you is, will react or respond mm-hmm. to me when I drop the towel and show you who I am, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing to be able to just listen to someone and have them open up. Mm. I'm thinking about recently, I met this taxi cab driver in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we just sat in his car and like talked for like 3 hours.
Wow. Wow. And you had the time and you...
This was actually like our second or third connection. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But because our first or second connection, I was like, in retrospect, I looked back on it and I was like, I really wish I could have been a better listener. Huh. And so I vowed to be a better listener. And then like the third time...
Same guy?
Hanging out. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The third... I mean, because we traded numbers.
Okay.
But the third time I was hanging out, I was like... I just like took more of that space to listen. The ways he was... He felt comfortable opening up.
Mm.
It's just really... It really touched me.
Mm.
It's beautiful.
To
have been able to experience that.
Yes. Yes, such a gift.
Yeah.
One thing it makes me think of your story is like, I think there's this misconception that listening is like an onerous chore, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I've got to listen to this person now. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's like, oh, you're like oversharing. You know, have you heard that term?
Yeah.
It makes me so sad because mm-hmm. it misses the gift that you're pointing mm-hmm. to. Mm-hmm. It's like this man... You got to receive the gift of his life for 3 hours. Like, trust of that, time out of time, you know?
Right. I'm going to stop this clip right here and let you know you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. This is an interview with Andrew Forstoffel, author of Walking to Listen and Valley Resident. And I'm Ruthie Woodring. Thanks for listening to Out There.
I want to ask you about your walk. So, in the different places that you've passed through, I'm just curious, like, what, if there are any like stories or interactions that stand out that you want to relate?
Yeah,
connections.
Yeah.
Ways that people opened up to you.
Yeah, one thing that I've been thinking a lot about recently is the practice of listening as a form of resistance, mm-hmm. you know, as a form of transformational resistance. Thinking a lot about like how do we walk with one another? How do we walk together, united mm-hmm. in our diversity? And how is listening a part of that, you know? How do I listen, and how can you expect me to listen to someone who believes something I find abhorrent? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just that really uncomfortable, challenging, like where listening becomes, where listening is work, mm-hmm. you know, where it's not, I'm getting to receive the gift of this beautiful man's life and he's trusting mm-hmm. me with these stories in the taxi cab, and it's someone who's entrusting me with a really gnarly thing. So specifically I'm thinking of, as a white man, there were many white people who figured they could share things with me that they definitely wouldn't have shared with a person of color. You know, so racist stories and hateful things, you know. And one story comes up over and over again when I think about this dynamic and what was my responsibility in that moment, in those moments. And one thing I found troubled to encounter in myself was the way that I didn't know what to do or how to respond, you know? And here I am, I'm this 23-year-old young man, far from home, vulnerable in lots of ways, on the road. And I felt scared, you know, to say something. But there was also something beyond the fear of my particular context, being far from home and stuff. And I think it's just the fear that I feel now in my life when I hear someone saying something racist or something disagreeable or hateful. And MLK, Martin Luther King Jr., talked about the appalling silence of the good people. And I saw that in myself. And so there was this one guy outside New Orleans who shouted out at me from the side of the highway. It was like this country road going into town. And it sounded kind of hostile. And so I kept walking. And then he shouted again. He goes, "Hey, you, Walker." I'm like, okay. I go over. He goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm walking across America. I'm walking to listen to people's stories. I started outside Philly, and I'm heading maybe as far as California." "Philadelphia. Oh, so you're a dang Yankee." And he didn't say dang. So you don't have to edit this.
That's okay. The D word is allowed in the show.
All right. Well, he didn't say damn either.
Oh, he didn't. F word. Okay.
And so, yeah. So here's this moment of, oh, whoa, he's throwing some gnarly stuff my way. "Who invited you down here?" You know, like, well, that's neutral ground you're standing on right now. But as soon as you come onto my lawn, that's my territory. I'm thinking, all right, all right. It's like, well, I'm not here to cause trouble. I am here to listen. If you're not into that, I'll move on, you know. So I turn to leave, and then he goes, "Well, hey, wait a second. You like beer?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "You want one?" I'm like, "Okay, okay." I go up to his porch. We go into his house. He gets a beer. All of a sudden, the vulnerability now was shared in a way that it wasn't before, I think. You know, like, we were in his house, and I could see how he was living, and he had cat toys lying all over the place. And my vision of this man, I was just getting more data, you know? He was more than just a crazy white dude screaming at me from the side of the highway. He was that and a guy who was living alone with his cat, you know? And and then he just started sharing stories of his life that were really hard to listen to, filled with hate and racism and violence. And he's sharing them in a way like he was like proud of that, you know, like not like reflective. And I'm just bearing witness. I'm feeling the challenge in myself of like, do I say something? What do I say?
Right.
How do I stay in connection with this person? Yeah. Without just rolling over.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it. I mean, I'm still learning that now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But he shared a story, and he was like, he was telling the story. I don't even remember the story. And he said, "I was really pissed off that day because I had to bury my son." And that was the moment that it became much more difficult for me to hate him. If not impossible, you know, and it didn't excuse in any way his hatred, racism, violence, but it just made me a less viable host for the disease of hatred, you know, and that's what I love about listening. It's not like some, I think, yeah, it doesn't excuse hatred in the so-called other, but it just makes hatred less less possible in the listener, because if you're really listening and asking questions and staying connected to the intention to understand someone. If you're making of yourself a trustworthy environment in that way, mm-hmm. you might get entrusted with a story that will make it less possible for you to hate them, mm-hmm. because they may trust that you're not going to respond to them with the violence that they're maybe mm-hmm. spouting out, maybe even spouting out at you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just, and it continues to be, it's hard. It's like, how can I listen to that?
Yeah. And not say anything.
And not say anything.
But you don't want to alienate
them
either.
Yeah. How do I? I remember talking to a friend of mine on the walk and speaking to her about this dynamic. Like, I don't know what to say. And mm-hmm. I feel guilty and mm-hmm. I feel wrong to not say something. Mm-hmm. But how? Mm-hmm. And she's an activist, a woman of color, and a teacher in many ways to me, and she said, just try asking them why. Mm-hmm. Why do you believe that? Mm-hmm. And then, like, what is it like to believe that? Mm-hmm. So if we're not going to be able to have a conversation about how what you believe maybe is causing harm in the world, if you're not willing to go there with me, I'll just ask you about your experience of believing that and invite you into telling me what it's like to think what you think about the whole demographic.
Yeah. And then if they go into like, well, there's good and bad in everybody, and I've just seen a lot of bad, and, you know, whether it's in jail and the gangs there, or, you know, if they did this to my family or whatever, like, then how do you know how much to just keep on listening?
What do you think? What is your, because you're a listener, clearly. What is your, where are you at in that part of the?
I think sometimes it depends on whether it's someone that you're having a one-time encounter with, uh-huh. or you're going to have an ongoing relationship with.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're going to have an ongoing relationship with them, then I think there's less of a sense of urgency.
Uh-huh.
I feel like there's more of a sense of like, there's going to be some back and forth, and I don't have to know what to say right now. I can process this in the next interaction.
Yeah.
I can think about it some more.
Yeah.
When it's like in the moment, like a one-time interaction, like this man you were talking about.
Mm.
Yeah, it seems hard. Like, I think, I feel like when I'm in those situations, I rarely am going to feel like I did the best thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always going to feel like I wish I had said more. And if I say more, I'm always going to feel like I wish I'd said less.
And I think that's a part of it. It's just, it's messy and, you know,
Well, maybe this is a good time to take a little break.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. You've been listening to an interview with Andrew Forstoffel, author of Walking to Listen, and I'm Ruthie Woodring. You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Table of Contents is a weekly music program that assembles an assortment of songs and sounds of many genres, and which may entail literally taking a random collection of musical courses off the shelf and giving them a turn on the table or spin in the CD or tape player. Each week presenting shows which can at times be organized orderly and at other times perhaps be not as much so, yet never dull. Tune in Friday nights 10 p.m. till midnight on WXOJ LP Northampton 103.3 FM.
Baha'i Perspective, hosted by Warren Odess Gillette, is a weekly radio broadcast of biographical interviews of people who have either chosen the Baha'i faith as a way of life or who have a relationship with the Baha'i faith. You can listen to the broadcast on Saturdays at 10 a.m. on WXOJLP 103.3 FM. That's Valley Free Radio.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. My guest today is Andrew Forstoffel, a famous listener. Wrote a book called Walking to Listen that actually my housemate Alex had read.
Oh, cool.
I think before he met you.
Cool.
And Andrew also does like listening workshops, teaching things like that, presentations and stuff too, right? Mm-hmm. If people are trying to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
If you go to livingtolisten.com.
Okay, cool. Do you have any upcoming events?
April 26th, around 6:30, I'm giving a talk at the Northfield Library. And then I think on May 2nd, a talk at the Greenfield Library.
Okay.
So back-to-back local.
Cool. And events. That information can be found on livingtolisten.com.
Yes.
.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, before the break, we were just talking a little bit about how to deal with people's racist rant, or with the, you know, places of trauma that they're coming from, which comes out as often racist hate or sexist or whatever. I was kind of curious, you know, you talked a little bit about how being white on this walk made it more likely that white people could open up to you about these things.
Yeah.
Are there other ways that being white affected you? How it affected your walk?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the first and most honest answer is it affected my walk in ways that I'll never fully understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
As a white person, I'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
But I trust and believe that every little square inch of my experience was touched by that,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
by the fact of my whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think about how when police cars pulled over on the highway in front of me because someone called them about some dude walking on the highway. Eventually, in the West, I started pushing my backpack in a baby stroller
mm-hmm.
To make things easier because the towns were really spread apart and it was hot at that point.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
People would see me on the highway pushing this baby stroller and think I had a baby in there. You know what I mean? So they'd call the cops and... There was one police officer pulled over and said, "Yeah, I got a call about a guy pushing a baby on the." I said, "Oh no, it's just a backpack." And he got on this transponder. Was like, "Yeah, I found the walker, and there's no baby involved." You know? But as a white man, I didn't experience the dread that I probably mm-hmm. would have experienced if I were a black man
mm-hmm.
when a police officer pulled over on the side of the road. Countless little things like that. Or knocking on someone's door,
yeah.
you know? It's like, as a white person, didn't have to encounter the prejudices that every American would have and project onto me as a... I mean, I had to encounter my own as a
mm-hmm.
white man.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that had certain stories about me. I mean, we all have assumptions about each other. And I think that was, for me, what I loved about the walk. I loved that I had set aside the time to really inquire into and investigate and examine the assumptions I was making about people.
Mm-hmm.
Real time, live.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be walking into a town. I would see somebody. I would make an assumption about who they were, and then I would go up to them and find out who they actually were, because that's the only way to find out is to then listen.
Yeah.
Think of a story, another story. This was in North Carolina, where I was in the middle of nowhere, you know, the backwoods, and I came across this sign on the highway that said, "Inmates working."
Mm-hmm.
And when you're driving on the highway, you see the sign, a few seconds go by, and then you see the prisoners, and then you're gone. You don't think twice about it. Me, I'm walking, so I see the sign,
yeah.
and they're a mile up ahead, so I have 20 minutes
uh-huh.
to freak out. and all the assumptions, right? Of, mm-hmm. And I'm out here on the road, and I'm going to come up on them, and they're going to be these big, strong men, and they're going to throw a prison break right. You know, yeah, all of my assumptions about who are inmates and imprisoned people. And I come upon them, and they're women, first off. Okay, number one. Number two, I come upon them, and we start, they go, one woman had a, they're picking up trash. Uh-huh. One woman had a fishing pole that there was someone had thrown out on the side of the road. She goes, hey, honey, you like fishing? You know? And I'm like, yeah, no, what? You know? And she's like, you want this fishing pole? I was like, oh, I'm like sensing friendliness. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe this is going to be okay. Maybe this person is more than this demonic nightmare I made of them, you know. Uh-huh. We start, and I walked with them for about a mile. Mm-hmm. And got to just listen to them, just hearing them, little snippets of their lives. Yeah, I'm almost out, only 2 more years. Wow. Something like that. It's like, whoa. Yeah, the first thing I'm gonna do when I get out is just be with my kids. Just little glimpses. And at the end, I shook their hands goodbye. The end for them, where the bus was picking them up. Mm-hmm. And one of them said, be careful out there. Not everybody's as nice as us. And I love that. You know, I got to find out a little bit more about who they actually were. Yeah. So we all have these assumptions. I, as a white person, didn't have to deal with some of the BS mm-hmm. that I, the sort of sacred sludge that mm-hmm. I would have had to deal with mm-hmm. If I were a person of color. And people of color have walked across America.
Yeah.
One of my heroes and inspirations is this man, John Francis, who I got to hear talk my last year in college, who walked across America for 18 years or something like that, underneath a vow of silence. Mm-hmm. And gay people have done it. And there was a gay man who was walking across America while I was. Mm-hmm. And women have done it. And each one of us who walks across America, or who just is living our life, however we're living it, is going to elicit from the world something totally unique.
Yeah.
And bring into the world something totally unique and needed. You know, so what? Yeah, there was a woman, Shay, her name was. She went to Hampshire, and she looked me up when I moved here. And we had coffee at the Haymarket, and she had walked from Florida to Minnesota on the highways. Same kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Young woman doing it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, her stories, her wisdom is going to be something that my walk never could be.
Yeah. I interviewed someone, Annie. Alex, what was Annie's last name?
Oh, Keithline.
Annie Keithline. She was living in Northampton a couple of years ago, so I had I have to look up the number, what number of podcast it is, but one of my early shows.
I think I've heard of her, yeah.
Okay, maybe like the 15th show I did was about her walk, with her, about her walk across the country. And she did the baby stroller thing.
Oh, she did?
Too.
Cool.
Wow. She has great stories to tell.
Yeah, wow. It worked pretty well. Huh. She would stop and work at different places along the way, too.
Huh. Cool.
I remember hearing a year or two ago, maybe a couple of years ago, about a black woman who walked from, I don't know, like Alabama or somewhere up to Washington, D.C.
Huh.
Without a shirt on. She had a mastectomy or double mastectomies. It was it was kind of about the sex. Well, it was sort of about, from the little snippet that I heard, about like not being ashamed of her body because she had lost her breast to cancer.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. I was going to ask you also how you think being male affected your walk.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, before I left, I wasn't having nightmares about getting raped. You know what I mean? And I don't know if that would have been the case if I was a woman, but I have to assume that I would have had to have been practicing in a way that I didn't have to as a man, you know.
Yeah.
I would have had to have been aware of, Well, I'm curious. Have you ever done a long distance walk or a long distance bike or some solo journey?
Not really a long distance solo. Like, I've hitchhiked alone a bunch.
Yeah.
But not really long distance, just short things here and there. Yeah. But the thing that I find that frustrates me as a woman doing that is just having to hear from so many people saying it's not safe. And that can be hard to get out of your head.
Interesting.
Even if it's not based on reality.
Yeah.
But so like other people projecting their fears onto you can be really intensely frustrating.
Yeah.
I wasn't afraid of anything until you started saying this stuff.
That's a fascinating dynamic to me. You know, it's like, oh gosh, I appreciate you bringing that up, because it's like, let's grant and recognize that, women. If I were a woman, I may have had to deal with certain things that I wouldn't have had to otherwise, catcalls, whatever, or worse. But let's also not assume that the world is as dreadful and nightmarish as we keep telling ourselves it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about like sexism kind of things, what about, how do you think in our culture, men and women, how do you think like listening is taught or practiced differently? So when we met in the park a couple days ago, you were talking about the recent shootings.
Yes.
And like, you know, men being responsible for pretty much all of these mass shootings that I'm aware of. And like a desire or like something being like unheard or unmet.
Yeah. Listening and masculinity, listening and men is a fascinating and really important topic of discussion, I think. For me, I was brought up with this idea that listening as a man was a form of weakness in a way, you know, maybe I don't think this is exclusive to men, but certainly speaking as a man, I can say that that I always had to have an answer. I always had to know something about something. I have an opinion, and the right opinion. You know what I mean? I had to be able to fix something and be sure I was getting my voice heard. And I have a loud voice, and so I'll just talk, you know what I mean? There was not much consideration in my formal education and in the models of masculinity that I was seeing in the media. And I did see some in my personal life, but models of how is listening a form of a responsible and beautiful way of utilizing power to uplift the so-called other. You know, and how is that a beautiful manifestation of manhood? You know, your ability to hold someone in whatever it is they have to share and say, and the strength that takes. It's not some passive form of weakness or obedience or acquiescence. It takes resilience and strength to listen, to really listen without getting in your two cents. You know what I mean? If you think about it that way, it's. I think men right now have a really important and incredible opportunity to reimagine what manhood is vis-a-vis the Me Too movement and sort of what's coming to light. You know, we're seeing what this story of what we've been telling ourselves a man is supposed to be. We're seeing the damage that has done, not just to women, but to men. And I think that's where the school shootings comes in. You know, I think that's where we have a lot of young men who are, whether they realize it or not, and most of them probably don't because they're just kids, rebelling against this ridiculous and violent ideal that they're told to become. You're supposed to be macho. You're supposed to be strong. You're supposed to always win the wrestling match. You're supposed to always win the debate. You're never supposed to feel lonely. You always got to do it on your own. Mm-hmm. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And that's insanity. Yeah. And so, if, I mean, and you're telling me I'm supposed to become that and enjoy it? Mm-hmm. And so it's no wonder that, I mean, the school shootings, I think, is a dramatic example of rebellion against this skewed version of manhood that we're asked to become as boys. But, you know, I think drinking is a part of that. I think, yeah, drug abuse is, I think, depression. I think it's sort of a rebellion against, or it's a crying out for a new story to live into. And I think listening can be, and hopefully will be, an important part of male identity as we move forward. You know, I think it's, it also takes the humility to recognize, my God, like, I as a man need to listen because I can't understand who I've been or even where I am right now without listening to the experiences of other people who have been affected by me. Mm-hmm. Or, not personally, just by this dominant version of masculinity that's out there. I need to hear about your version, your experiences of encountering that in order to better understand who I am and who I want to become. And without listening, that can't happen.
If you've been listening, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ. LP 103.3 FM in Northampton. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and this is Andrew Forstoffel. Forstoffel? Why do you say your own name?
So Forstoffel. Many, that's one of many wonderful variations I've heard on it.
Is anybody interested in bidding on the box of jeans or good jeans? They're all clean jeans. I take them to the laundrette and keep them washed when I haul them around sale. $5? $5 you go $7.95. $5 you want a $7.95 anywhere. $5 you get a $7.95 to go anywhere. $5 you get a $6. $5 you want a $6. You want a $6 anywhere. Give a $6. $6 to go anywhere. $5 you get a $6 anywhere. $5 you get a $6. $5.95 you get a $6. $6 bid you give high, $6 bid you give a seven, $7 bid you go high, 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 $7 b $12 bid, woman, 14, 14, anywhere. $12 bid over here, give 14. $12 bid, you get 14, 14 to go anywhere. $12 bid, you get 14 anywhere. Last call. $12 bid, you get 14. $12, 222.
That little interlude was from an auction singer in Middlesboro, Kentucky.
So welcome back to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Oh, you can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. And Valley Free Radio streams online at valleyfreeradio.org. So Andrew had another question. Oh, here's a question. How can you be a good listener even if you're not a good rememberer?
Cool. I would say that listening, the kind of listening that I'm talking about, actually has very little to do with remembering what someone said yesterday or a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm talking about is presence, is really being with mm-hmm. someone. Which to me means, what does that mean? What does that involve? It means it takes a humility, you know, and an interest in who they are. Mm-hmm. And it takes a letting go of needing to change them mm-hmm. or to teach them something or manipulate them in any way. Mm-hmm. It just presence, being with, mm-hmm. really with somebody.
Cool. And another question I had is, I don't know if when you were on your walk, if people ever yelled, get a job, or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious about the idea of like what work is valuable in this world. I don't know, it sort of leads into like, what does it mean to be human or to participate or to share the planet? Because like right now you're doing a lot of, you do a lot of like speaking, talking, those kinds of like social healing kinds of things. I guess that's sort of like three questions in a row. Maybe go back to your walk. They don't ever say, get a job.
I remember one guy in Texas who did. But there were hardly any people who said, get a job, which sort of suggests what you're doing isn't work. Mm-hmm. What you're doing isn't contributing, you know, which I hear in the second part of your question. People really got it.
Yeah.
People, by and large, really, really got it.
Yeah.
You know, they understood that what I was doing was work. It's hard. It took sacrifice. It was uncomfortable. It was scary. It was, and I was doing it with the intention to connect, you know, and thank you. I mean, people would say, far from saying, go get a job, you lazy bum. People would say, thank you. And they would say, I'm proud of you.
Oh, interesting.
And they would say, I love you. Mm-hmm. Even. So, and why? You know, like what was it they were responding to in me, in this walk? And I mean, it's anybody's guess. My guess is that they were responding to someone who was heeding and obeying the questions that he felt inside him.
Yeah.
And trusting that even though he didn't know what following those questions would do in his own unique, wacky way, that it was worthwhile, you know? And I think that it touched. A lot of people would say, oh, man, I wish I could do that. Or, I wish I had did that, you know? And just, you know, I think at some level, the mold that many of us are handed, born into this particular culture of this is what success is, or this is what a woman is, or a man is, or this is your track. I think at for most of us, we feel the existential or spiritual deficiencies in this mold that we're told to fit ourselves into, even if we really try to fit ourselves into that mold. And so I think people were, my mold-breaking attempt at connection, I think, touched people. They could, like, oh, dang, like, I want to connect, you know?
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Alex, Clarissa, any questions from the audience?
Nice.
All right, go back to your computers.
Something I like to think about is how I can get people walking and listening and on a smaller scale, on a local scale. So one of my dreams that I've talked about before on Out There is imagine like families, like, it's, you know, walking to school on paths through the woods, or like I've connected a bunch of paths as a way, and you can walk through mostly through the woods to the co-op. So imagine, you know, if like, oh, it's, you know, it's Saturday, it's time for our walk to the co-op to go shopping.
Yeah.
And then and imagine if you had so many people that they were meeting as they walked. I mean, this could happen on the streets too, but I love walking through the woods, so I'm partial to that. And just having those trails be available. So I just wondered, how have you thought about ways of like, oh, how do I bring, you know, this whole adventure I had and have that happen here?
I'm in the process of figuring that out. And I think your point is very important. Like if we relegate the work of walking and listening to those who are just embarking on these unusual long distance journeys, we're neglecting the work that's being asked of us right here and now, you know? So for the listening, I think of listening as an apprenticeship from which there isn't a single moment's rest. So there's always, at every moment, even if I'm alone, the invitation to listen and the question, am I listening right now? You know, like, and what that means, what listening is and looks like is going to be change. You know, it's not always, it's just going to change. So I think of it, I think of the listening part with that, and the walking, I don't know. I would say you have more experience in that than I do, of bringing walking into the day-to-day rhythms of life, you know, and that's actually been something I've really struggled with since rooting down here in the valley after being a sort of traveler for a while, is how do I keep the walking piece alive, you know? So yeah, that, the most honest answer feels like I don't really know about the walking piece. I would love to work with you on that. And there's also a guy in Colorado I want to connect you with. Jonathan Stahl's walked across America, and he's in Denver, and he has this organization, Walk to Connect, that's all about bringing what he realized was available on his long distance walk into community and here, and let's just do a little one, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's big. It's big.
Yeah. On Saturday, I'm going to go to Worcester and to follow along with a friend who has an activity there. And I'm going to have a bunch of hours.
Huh.
I'm just going to be kind of set down in Worcester and going to walk.
Awesome.
And see what I can discover. And who
walk
I can
to
meet.
Listen. Yeah. What, see if you, when I think of the walking to listen, when I think of that coupling, it is different than just listening, and it is different than just walking. And what it is, it's like, the invitation would be try walking with a question that you then entrust to somebody you meet,
mm-hmm.
and try asking it. And man, this is something I take to schools where we'll do a listening walk. You know, and each student will find a question that means something personal to them, something that's alive and hot for them in their life right now. A kind of question that might be scary to ask for what it might reveal about them, you know. And then we go walk, and whoever we find, it's like, hey, I know this might be weird. Like I did it with a group of students in Nashville, and I sent them off to go do it, and then I was like, oh, I gotta do it too. I can't not do what I'm asking them to do, you know? So I went into this Baskin Robbins, and it was empty, and this woman was, you know, washing the dishes or whatever it was, and she turned and she's like, yeah, what can I get you? And I was like, I'm actually not here for ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you a question? And I felt so scared. All this stuff coming up, and it's that same thing, like this thing that I long for most, connection, is also something I'm afraid to lean into. So it's like, can I ask you a question? And she was like, okay. I was like, I'm doing this walk and I'm asking people about happiness. What is happiness to you? And it was just the beginning of this beautiful, like with the taxi driver. It's like, it doesn't take much to just ask the question and then see what unfolds. So maybe you'll see someone in Worcester and get into it together.
Where is that? Were you thinking of something?
No, I was thinking. Did you, your original question when you were, didn't you go with a question on your walk? It was,
yeah.
Like, what would you tell your
23-year-old
self?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
It's just a great, like, it's a great way to start off a meaningful conversation with somebody, because it takes them to the heart of, wow, is there something I regretted, you know, or something it's a good one. What would you ask your 23-year-old self if you could?
Yeah,
you know, because it implies I'm looking for some help.
Yeah,
what I'm saying by asking that question is like I'm open to what you may have to teach me.
When you wrote your book, since it did take years,
yeah,
and you were older than 23 by the time you finished it.
Yeah.
Did that come up for yourself? What am I telling my, what would I tell my 23-year-old?
Yeah, kind of thing. Definitely. Yeah. And I decided it would be, what was it? There's no need to be afraid. So like, if I was going to tell myself at the beginning of my walk, like what would I say? Just a little thing. I couldn't explain it, but just, I would say, Andrew, there's no need to be afraid. You know exactly what to do somehow and keep walking. And then trust that that would land somewhere in him and be useful.
Well, thanks for listening to out there. That was an interview with Andrew Forstafel, who walked across the country after he graduated from college. And then he wrote a book about it entitled Walking to Listen. Andrew lives in Williamsburg. That interview was from early March 2018. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening. You can hear archived editions of Out There at weatherbeer.com/out there.